You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This podcast is sponsored by Hover, the best way to buy and manage domain names. Please visit hover.com and use the promo code pepperoni to get 10% off your first order. Welcome to the Mad Men Happy Hour, the officially unofficial podcast for Mad Men. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And tonight we're covering Season 7, Episode 5, entitled The Runaways. What did you think of this kind of crazy episode of Mad Men?
That's super insensitive to Michael Ginsburg, Jim. That's what I think. My second thought was, I liked it. My third thought is, holy shit, a lot of people hated this episode.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle.
By a lot of people, I mean Alan Sepinwall was meh on this episode.
Well, I was meh on Alan Sepinwall's review.
I thought so, too. You can definitely tell that he's watching this late at night and going without a screener.
Sure.
A lot of long-term fellow fans and feedbackers were also not thrilled. We'll have one that we kind of spotlight. I don't get the hate. I'm not going to argue this is the best episode of Mad Men, not even the best episode of this season. In fact, the last two have been a slight come down.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we got some vintage Don Draper.
Yep.
We got some interesting, a lot of people didn't like what's going on in Castle Francistein. I actually did like it, especially the stuff around Sally and Bobby.
Sure.
So, and I thought the Ginsburg stuff, far from coming out of nowhere, has been something laid in from the ground. This is groundwork has been laid since we first met the dude.
Sure.
So, I didn't not appreciate that. I don't know what that meant, but yeah.
You appreciated it.
Yes, yes.
Okay. I felt it was a little less put together than I expect a Mad Men episode to be. It felt patchy to where there were parts of it that really worked well together and parts of it that I just didn't. Not that I just didn't care for it, but I felt like it was a disjointed episode.
In some ways. Have you been influenced by Sepinwall? Sounds like you're reading, you're cribbing notes from him.
Well, he's right about that.
There
are themes running through this episode, but they don't seem to be as strong for everyone as some of the episodes we've seen in past Mad Men seasons and even this season. There was a very strong 2001. We get a little bit more of that in this episode, but and there's a lot of authority stuff running through this, and we'll talk about all that when we get to it. But it wasn't there for everyone, and it felt different for everyone as well.
I think it's interesting that you say it's disjointed, because that implies that the regular Mad Men episodes are particularly well-jointed.
I think they are.
I don't know. So I guess we'll get into the review and talk about,
into
the recap and talk more about that, because I don't understand. When I say, someone says disjointed, if you just say that and that's it, it's like, I feel like that is a placeholder for something else that's really bothering you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, if someone says, well, I say this a lot, there's tone problems. Mm-hmm. Well, until you get into that, what does that even mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
okay. Well, let's start the recap.
Please.
Stan finds, some of Lou's artwork on the copier. When you find out that it's Scout's Honor, this is a character that Lou has dreamed up, one that he compares later to Underdog. It was a big character in the 50s, I guess.
Well, in the 60s, too. And in fact,
I remember seeing reruns of the Underdog cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was a kid.
Also mentions, I think his name's Mort Walker, the guy that created Beetle Bailey, which just seems to be kind of a I would call it a mashup of Beetle Bailey and Underdog.
Okay.
Do you think that Lou intended this to be found as a way to kind of like test the waters? Or do you think this was just a massive fuck up by him?
I think it was, I don't know, because he's making copies of it, right? Or he's having Shirley make copies of it. It seems like that's going out to people eventually, but just wasn't supposed to get out yet. So I can't say that he didn't want people to see it, because why the hell do you make copies of something that you don't want anybody else to see?
No, I meant particularly the audience the here at team? SCNP.
Hmm.
I mean, like I said, was this a soft leak? Or I don't know. This shit happens all the time.
I feel like it was just Shirley's mistake.
Like, I've been horrified by some of the things I've seen on the office printer. Like people's vacation plans, order forms, stuff. You know, it's like, okay, I get you make personal use of company materials, but I don't need to see your personal lubricant orders and shit like that, okay? And I imagine that in, you know, the photocopy is a pretty new machine. I think that it was a fairly big deal when they got one a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole etiquette and, you know, I don't know that especially a crusty fuck like Lou would have that down. So I don't know. To me, I don't think he meant for it to get out into the wilds of SCNP.
No, I don't think so either. It was probably just a mistake by Shirley. You know, she was making copies and then ended up, somebody said, hey, give me some coffee, Shirley, or something. And
oh, fuck no. Lou would have fucking had a cow if this was Shirley's fault. It's all him. I think it's all him.
You think so?
He fucked up. Yep.
Huh. Okay. But Shirley comes in a couple of scenes and gets the drawings back, right?
No, actually she doesn't, because I think the person who gets them finally is Don.
Well, we'll talk about it when we get there.
All right, let's do.
So we find out that this, you know, it says on the thing, this is a scout. He can take anything but an order. He's got a plunger and a rifle. He's obviously a soldier.
Dog soldiers.
What's the plumber angle here? Is there one? Because it seems to be the big showcase for Scout's honor with him holding a plunger.
I don't know. I think it's just a wacky attempt at humor. Toilet plungers are funny. The fact that you could, you know, get one confused with the other.
Okay.
I mean, I don't get it. I don't particularly understand. I thought the funniest Scout's Honor cartoon was the one that Stan drew, where Scout turns on his creator Lou.
Yeah.
So Lou's a square dude. I don't know that he's capable of producing funny things.
All right, let's move on to Peggy seeing Don in the elevator. She tells him that Lou's happy to have Don on the Handy Wrap account, and so is Peggy. But you know, on the team, like as part of the team, not as the leader of the team.
Peggy is a terrible boss.
Why do you say that?
I don't know whether she's just this awful interacting with Don because, you know, it's just awkward being his former protege and now his boss.
Mm-hmm.
But just her, I know she wasn't intentionally patronizing. She's making sure that Don doesn't usurp her authority or, you know, it seems like that's what she's afraid of that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes across as her either being scatterbrained or patronizing Don. Like, Don's an idiot and he doesn't get it.
Yeah, she's pretty bad at dealing with people for the most part. It's amazing how good she is at being an ad woman, considering how bad she is at talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
But she can apparently understand people and their motivations and stuff, but just doesn't know how to communicate with them effectively.
Right.
Let's move on. Ginsburg yells at the computer through the glass, Peggy sees him.
Yeah, I feel like he's heckling the computer operator.
That's what Peggy thought, too, or that he wanted a date with her.
I really liked it when they panned into her perspective, how it was just him sitting there. She couldn't hear a damn word he's saying because of the persistent hum, the air conditioning, and the fact there's glass between them.
Sure, and that was just to show us, you know, later on why you couldn't hear Lou and Cutler in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly helped to illustrate that. Ginsburg here makes a comment about being Cassandra.
Yeah.
And I looked that up. Cassandra in Greek mythology was a prophet. She had the power of prophecy and the curse of never being believed.
Yeah.
Does that lend any credence to Ginsburg's claim later that the computers are making everyone homo?
No. No. It's a crazy person making the claim exactly. that he's the prophet that's doomed to never be believed. So, no, I do not believe that.
Okay, good.
Plus, I've spent a lot of time around computers. Still likes the ladies.
All right.
Maybe the computers have just, the FCC has tightened up the homo.
Sure. Well, they got shielding
emitting
now.
Rays. Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. I haven't. Don't know. That's why you shouldn't operate your computer with the case off.
Sure.
Waves of homo just come flying out of those machines.
Also, Stan definitely does not have the power of prophecy. I remember him saying at one point that when she was considering hiring Ginsburg, that she was going to be hiring her boss.
Hmm.
And I kind of got tongue-tied there and started to understand what I was saying, but definitely not going to be her boss at the end of this episode.
No. In fact, I mean, I think Ginsburg's heading for a really sad trajectory, even sadder than being carted off to the mental hospital.
I was going
to
say, do you think he's coming back? He's gone completely bonkers, dismembering his nipples.
I predict we see him gibbering on the streets and somehow in the second half of next season.
Okay.
Because America, even today, does not have a very good track record with dealing with mentally ill people with poor support systems.
Sure.
And his dad's old. You know, if he dies, that's pretty much it for him. And there's a distressing amount of homeless people have mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that maybe Ginsburg's going to be one of those statistics.
I can certainly see that. Stan gives Lou's drawings back to Shirley, who tells him that they shouldn't have seen it. And then they make some jokes about it.
Are you sure? Because I thought
he definitely hands her at least some of them. Yes.
Because he also had, oh, he made copies for himself.
Yeah, he did.
Because he does give Don some too, who also keeps. I guess that's why I was confused.
Uh-huh. So I imagine he probably has more than just one copy of it.
Probably.
More than two copies. Probably a lot of copies.
Mm-hmm.
Although when Don takes it, he says, "You're going to just force me to draw my own."
Right.
Which, yeah. I mean, he's already kind of doing it at that point.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, his versions are even better.
Yeah. And then Ginsburg is complaining about the radio being broken in this scene. I don't really know what to make about that. I mean, we've heard him complain about voices being beamed into his head before.
Sure, last season.
He doesn't necessarily mention anything about the computer beaming voices in his head directly, but they're having some effect to make him homosexual. So, I don't know. Maybe now that the radio is broken, that was one of the things keeping the computer at bay.
Mm.
Now that that's gone, he's got to cut off his nipples to do that.
I don't know. I think that the computer, or I think he viewed the radio malfunctioning as kind of the canary in the mine shaft.
Okay, yeah.
That these data waves had interfered with the benign radio waves.
Uh-huh.
That's the other thing about the crazy people is none of that shit's consistent.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, electric
different
wires.
Different kinds of waves.
Yeah. Electromagnetic radiation. It's some of it's good, some of it's bad. Who's to know? And I mean, that's
true. A microwave versus a radio wave.
Yeah.
Very, very different.
That's very, very different. Human. Yep. Gamma ray. It's all a bunch of different stuff.
Sure. Next scene, Don's dictating notes for Meredith when he gets a call from Stephanie Horton. Yes.
I love how he spells something out and then has to say in the dictator that no, I don't want that spelled out, Meredith, honey.
Yeah.
I just
want
it spelled right.
So Stephanie's pregnant. She needs money. Don tells her that she can go to Megan's house and he'll fly there later to talk to her. And then he calls Megan up to tell her about it. And she says, there's a party at my house tomorrow. Just a lot of conversation going on there. What did you think when you saw Stephanie Horton show back up?
I have two thoughts.
Okay.
First off, remember in the second episode, or maybe it was the third episode. I don't know. It's a compressed season's fucking with me.
Yeah.
But Mary Wells, the advertising agency, was plying Don with an offer and booze and also what we think, a prostitute. And a lot of people are like, is that Stephanie? Is that Ann's daughter? or not daughter, niece, Anna Draper's daughter. And we're like, no, of course not. But do you think that she looked enough like her that it triggered Don's memory? And that's one of the reasons he had such a bizarre reaction to it.
Interesting.
Because it's weird that they have her show up. He has that reaction, which is, you know, a little strong for what it was, which is him like, really, fellas, you know, I have to do the hard sell. And then two episodes later, we have the real Stephanie. I just wonder if there wasn't, if that's some sort of wiener foreshadowing.
Maybe there's a lot more foreshadowing than I expected in previous seasons, even coming up to this point, for especially for Ginsburg, even for Don and Megan, a lot of stuff there. So I would not put it past him. Certainly. Okay. He seems to be good at that. So the creative team is wasting time, smoking weed, making fun of Scout. Then Don comes in to drop off some new work for them. And then he takes away the loose drawings from Stan. May or may not be the last copy.
Right. I love Stan. He's one of my favorite characters for a couple seasons now. But his response to the dweeby guy saying, I guess Don's still faculty. He's like, nah, he's going to go stroke to him later. Hilarious.
What exactly
does
he... I laugh
so hard.
I know what he means by the stroking stuff.
Okay, let me
not,
explain.
Not...
Sometimes when a young man feels like he's backed up,
what
he
does
can
he
cut
mean?
His nipple off, or...
What does he mean by faculty? I mean...
Like he's like teacher. That's what you call a teacher.
Sure, taking away the
so
kids' toys or messing around in class.
They're the students, and he's even though he's been demoted, he still sides with the teachers. He still
But Stan
sides.
Is saying he realizes how dumb these things are. Like he's kind of in on the joke with us.
Yeah, that he's
but he has
not,
to be
right.
The partner here.
Like, and the fact that he would stroke to them is even saying that he's even more into it than they are.
Okay.
Like that, and the whole joke is that Lou's got this aspiration and it's terrible and all that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to finish my thought in the previous scene. I was surprised at how down. I thought that Don calling Megan and saying, "Oh, by the way, my niece is coming and I've made all these plans and whatever," that would be a shitstorm. She was surprisingly down for whatever.
She was
until Stephanie actually showed up. But did you and that also was an interesting window into their life. Like, this is yet another one of those fights that they've had, and we're like, oh my God, this is it.
Yeah, yeah.
And two episodes later, everything's cool.
It seemed like it was a very epic fight as well. I mean, she kicked him out of the house for, I think, the first time we've ever seen.
Didn't want to see him again.
Yeah, but it also feels kind of like a natural arc for a relationship. I mean, you don't have, like, a fight that brings down a relationship usually. Like, you'll have a fight, people will apologize, make amends, try to work on it, and then later on, the fights will just keep compounding.
That's true. It's just, you know, we've been talking about this for three seasons, this downward spiral, or every time they come back around, they're a little bit of a lower level. I was surprised with all the strong words said. That again, Megan's first thought was, yeah, sure, whatever. So, I can't wait to see you, and you're still coming out next
week. Well, I think that's a big part of it. Like, she's looking forward to seeing him the next weekend. Seems like she's genuine about that.
Right.
So when he calls up and says, hey, there's someone coming to the house who I know, but I'm also coming out there this weekend. Maybe she's just happy that Don is coming out.
Could be.
And so she overlooks the other part?
I mean, that could be, yes. But okay. I didn't get the point that she's overlooking anything. She just seems to be, you know, that speaks well of her because...
She might have been high.
True. I think in a good relationship, this is the kind of thing you should be able to do. Like, I have a family member in need.
Yeah.
And you've got the expectation that your partner's going to be down for whatever to help out.
Sure.
It's only in like bad relationships where people would be, or shitty people where people would be bad. But I was thinking that Megan, the relationship was bad enough that she might give static, like, oh, really? You just expect you're just going to drop this on me?
Yeah.
I didn't even fucking know you had a niece.
Imagine what would happen if Henry tried to drop a niece on Betty in the middle of the day from across the country.
I don't think she could bear the weight if he just literally dropped her.
Probably not. So Betty and Henry are having some people over, and this scene is kind of the setup for that. They talk about, you know, what kind of food they're going to have and just mundane stuff.
What is this neighborhood walking munch
they've
got going on? It seemed like a recurring thing.
Yeah, it's like a bar hopping night, but house to house eating hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
I don't know what was up with that. I've never heard of that custom.
Is that something that rich people and well-connected people do? Is that the upper crust version of the neighborhood barbecue?
Well, she also made a point.
The block party?
I mean, yeah, all these people are probably fairly wealthy. But she makes a point of saying, like, we're just regular people too. And that's the government connection. Do you not remember that? When she says, I think she says it to Henry, and I think it's in this scene where they're talking about, like, you know, this fancy smorgasbord that they're laying out, and Betty's like, oh, well, they need to understand that we're just regular neighbors. We're just regular people.
Well, so Henry's got some kind of elected office now.
Yeah.
And I don't know. A lot of this stuff goes over my head, and I thought she was making a reference to, because I heard, like, cocktail wieners and stuff like that. I thought that was a reference to the food choices that she was trying to play up a homie angle. But you might be right. And again, I'm a dude. This blows my mind that you'd have this house-to-house munching bullshit going on.
Sure.
Never even heard of that.
So maybe she's trying to make the food choice so they think, you know,
yeah, like you
they're
can
not
have,
super
you can have corn dogs
fancy
or cocktail
but she's
wieners,
also got maki or... which is sushi, and in the 60s sushi is not the big thing that it is
Are
now
I thought maki was some kind of Greek thing.
Maybe it is, but a sushi roll is called the maki roll.
We need to have our own cooking show. Jim and Aaron know nothing about food.
Today we're making maki. I bring some ingredients. You bring some Mediterranean ingredients.
Sushi, like, and baklava. It's two tastes great that taste great together.
All right, let's move on. Stephanie's welcome at Megan's house with food and a shower, a much-needed shower, apparently.
Yeah, the whole... I just thought this was really funny. Megan's, like, saying, you're filthy. No, I'm not trying to say you're filthy, but serious, you're filthy.
Yeah, yeah.
Run a bath.
It's like, oh, is it that bad? Well, no. Oh, I don't know.
In fact,
maybe
after you
is.
Get done your bath, run me one because I hugged you.
Yeah.
And now I need one.
Ugh. They do a good job of... The hippiness of the hippies portraying that.
Yeah, Steppenwolf mentioned that they always go all out on the dirt.
Yeah.
The art department always gives them a nice patina.
Sure, and we got a lot of that in the last episode with Roger and his daughter.
Sure. Grimy, filthy hippie sex.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a mention of meat here. She really wants meat.
Steak.
When Megan later cooks it for her, she decides, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Is this all about pregnancy and just her cravings, or is this something deeper?
Okay, so Stephanie is BP. She's before podcast. And seasons 1 through 3, I don't have a perfect recall.
Okay, yeah.
Because I was watching more as a fan and not as quite as an analytic. In fact... Wasn't she a season 2 phenomenon? Which that was before you and I were watching it together.
Yeah.
So it's like that's even. But I recall Stephanie as being pretty plain dealer.
Okay.
I don't think she'd be the type that would order a steak and then turn her nose up on it just because she's trying to play some kind of game.
Sure, I don't either.
Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I was wondering if there was metaphor to the meat.
A meat metaphor?
Yeah, a metaphor.
I don't know. I tend to just explain it all because she's pregnant.
Okay.
Like, steak sounded really good, but then the baby put his foot right in the middle of her stomach.
Yep.
And now she's got a little acid reflux action, and oh, I don't want to eat big old fucking steak.
Okay. I could buy that as well. So Stan makes a joke about Scout's honor in the bathroom, and unfortunately, Lou is in the stall, and he hears everything.
But doesn't say anything.
Doesn't say anything.
Just passive-aggressively takes it out in a meeting. And
yeah.
Then...
What an asshole of a boss.
Right. Yeah.
The appropriate time to deal with that is in private in the bathroom when it happens.
Or like as you're walking out, like, you know, Rizzo in my office.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you could get to the bottom. But yeah, he's a fucking asshole.
Yep.
What are you going to do? The man has a tiki bar in his office.
So let's talk about that. Let's go to his office.
Do we have to?
We have to, unfortunately. During the meeting in Lou's office, he's pissed about the Scout's Honors joke. He gets fed up, and he tells everyone that they're working late that night. which ruins Don's plans.
Can we talk about Stan's dress?
Oh, hell yes,
I don't want to go Tom and Lorenzo on this, okay. But those pants, so tight.
That belt, so big.
That ascot, so flashy.
That shirt, so denim.
he's dressed like Fred from Scooby-Doo, man.
It's incredible.
I was full expecting...
And the hair and the beard, and it's like...
I was full expecting Shaggy to come in and zoik it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
and the beard is... a fucking lion mane at this point.
It's glorious, yeah.
I love that beard. I have beard jealousy of Stan.
And you have a pretty impressive beard in your own right.
But, yeah, I have limitations. It wants a fork. I found that out last year to my deep regret. I tried to grow, like, an epic beard, and it started to fork after it got 3 or 4 inches long. And I'm like, nope, I got to be, like, 50, balding with a ponytail and on a Harley Davidson to pull this fork beard bullshit off, so I had to whack it back down. But
all right,
yeah, it's just full and out there.
Yeah, it's impressive. So there's a lot of commentary in this episode or in this scene about people not taking Scout's honor seriously and what that means. He calls everyone flag burning snots. Says you've got a thing to learn about patriotism and loyalty. The very fabric of Scout's honor is a joke to you. There's a lot of authority themes running through this episode with many of the characters, even to Don. They even extend that far. And Betty, even, which I guess we'll talk more about as we get to them.
Sure.
But this is kind of where it all starts. Actually, it all starts at the very beginning with Scout's Honor.
What do you think about that squirmy guy that his name escapes me?
Mathis, I think his name is.
Is it? Yeah. He kind of like tried to bump Stan, and then Stan like body checked him back.
Oh, is there coming out the door?
Yeah, Stan would destroy that guy.
He's like a foot taller and 70 pounds heavier.
Yes. That guy could wear Stan like a suit. He could get inside him like an exoskeleton, is what I'm saying. I thought that was super funny.
Sure. So then we go back to Betty's house, and she makes some dinner discussion faux pas when the topic of Vietnam comes up.
Right.
And Henry has to cover his ass.
That's the problem, is the topic of Vietnam did not come up. She made a connection from the street violence and over to Vietnam, and then opined that she thinks they should double down and get these young people involved in more stuff, maybe conscript them into the military. Wait, we're already doing that. So we can win this damn thing.
Yeah, Betty...
Which is, I take it, is an ultra-conservative view at this point in time, at this point in 69.
Yeah. See, Betty is one of those spots where things start to get patchy in this episode for me.
Okay.
Because, especially when it relates to this theme of authority, Betty... in this scene is suggesting that we should submit to authority. You know, they're putting on this war. We should be on board with it. The morale should be higher.
So well, we owe the government as citizens loyalty.
And then when she's in the bedroom with Francis, and also in the kitchen, and he comes down and chastises her for what she did in this scene, she seems to buck his authority, or what she would perceive in the 1960s as, you know, him being the head of the household and having the final say. She seems to just resist that, at least in the kitchen. I mean, she apologizes for it later in the bedroom,
which I was shocked by.
I was too, yeah. But she's kind of a mixed bag when it comes to that.
Henry's kind of a mixed bag. Where did this come from?
Sure.
Like, we've talked about how preternaturally patient and understanding he is with Betty, even when, you know, the woman's, like, gained and lost 100 pounds. She's her casual cruelty to her own children and to the quote unquote help.
She possibly fakes a cancer scare.
The rape fantasy she has with her 13-year-old house guest. What makes Henry lose his patience is her opening her mouth and giving a political opinion.
It's interesting because that directly affects him, right?
Yeah, like, is everything else was other people that he didn't really care about.
Yeah.
But this affects him and his political future, which might be a little rocky.
Sure.
Pardon the pun. But still, I thought, like, there was no evidence that this was in his character. And not only that, but he just went straight to the demeaning, misogynistic cutdowns.
Yeah.
Putdowns, rather.
And even yelling at her is way outside of his character. Although, right. They try to retcon it this episode by having Bobby tell Sally that I've heard these things before.
I thought, see, he was referring to this incident.
What do you mean?
He was outside their door when he was screaming and yelling at them. So I thought he made reference to that, not multiple instances.
Oh, see, I was under the impression that he had said there were more than just a single fight. All right. Well, I guess we'll have to go back and look at that. So Don thinks he's on his way out of the office for the night as he drops off some work. Makes a rookie mistake, and Lou says he'll do Don the courtesy of reading it. Sends Don back to work. Makes a rookie mistake with that briefcase in the hat. Think he could have pulled one over on Lou? I don't think so. I think Lou was just determined to ruin his night.
Yeah, I guess that's what Don was hoping, that he could get out of the, since he is faculty, that he could get out of the everybody write a sentence type of thing. What's another hallmark of a bad leader? Like, you always hate those teachers that, like, hand out class punishments when one or two people are what's doing it.
Yep.
I always wondered, it's like, so what is the takeaway? Am I supposed to beat the shit out of this asshole that's making me write 100 sentences of bullshit in class? Is that what you're, I mean, am I supposed to do a code red? Uh-huh. Because that's what the group punishment is to do. You punish the group, so the peer pressure, but short of being able to beat this guy's ass, I mean, well, I don't get it.
I mean, Lou is just a poor leader, so
he's
probably just fucking it up, and this is a terrible solution.
In anything outside of, like, some kind of military setting where it's, like, very Spartan and you can get away with hazing and doing that shit to apply peer pressure with teeth, I just feel like that's such a stupid thing to do.
Sure. So we talked a little bit about what Lou does that's stupid. He also does recognize the rookie mistake that Don makes. Do you think...
But that's the thing. Don's not... That's not a rookie mistake. That's Don just assuming that Lou's not going to be an asshole to him as management. It's like, you and I are in this kind of together.
Sure. I could buy that. I could also buy the explanation that Don just doesn't respect Lou's intelligence very much and doesn't think that Lou will pick up on that. Because we've seen Lou just be a dumbass every so often.
Yeah.
That's putting it mildly, maybe. Do you think that maybe Lou recognizing this is to prep us for this war that's about to happen, that maybe Lou will be more formidable of an adversary for Don than we thought?
No. God, no. God, okay. No. This is just Lou misinterpreting every social. Don basically said, look, I busted my ass and I got this for you.
Yeah.
I'm not one of the kids. I had nothing to do with what they're being punished for. Letting me the fuck out of here. And Lou didn't. So then Don's like, he started getting real with him. He said if it was up to him, he would fire Lou.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
It's a little too late for that, but.
And then Don tries to give him some honest to God advice. Mm-hmm. Like, you should be above this bullshit. Like, these guys are going to hate authority because that's what they do. They're young people. Don't make it easy for them.
Sure.
And
I think Don saying this is an office made of people with problem with authority, he's also kind of talking about himself.
He is part of that office full, is he not?
Yes, he absolutely is.
Certainly.
I feel like the only outsider here is Lou. Probably Cutler. I mean, some other guys, but, you know, he's talking to Lou here.
Right.
So, I mean, that comes right back to the theme of authority in a very direct way. And I think Don is... you know, opposed to it.
But your question of whether Lou can outfight Don, no fucking way.
No. That was a question raised for the sake of discussion.
Don is Michael, Lou is Fredo.
Okay, cool. So Don calls Megan to let her know that he can't make it to California tonight because of asshole Lou. Megan gets a little more familiar with Stephanie, who says that she knows all of Don's secrets, and Megan kind of gives her some advice. Says your life is too disorganized for Don to approve of. Writes her a check and sends her off. Mm-hmm. She actually doesn't send her off. Stephanie just feels like she's not wanted there.
Well, that message received.
Yes, because Megan sends that message loud and clear. And so she leaves of her own volition. This is the scene where we were talking about her not eating the meat that she was prepared. There's some mention also of the pregnancy Stephanie's being pregnant, and Stephanie asks Megan if kids are something that she wants, and Megan says, no, Don's kids are enough for me. What do you make of that?
Well, I think there's so much going on here.
Yeah.
So many reasons that this particular package is threatening to Megan. The fact that she's, you know, young and beautiful and has this history with Don. And the fact that, you know, what makes it tense for us as an audience is we know how hard he went after Stephanie and how kind of inappropriate that was and how that's in kind of Don's wheelhouse. And now he's pretending like that never happened and, you know, whatever. And that he's just, you know, that, yeah, you're my niece. That's how I see you. What am I? What am I, a pervert?
Uh-huh.
So there's that that's going on for us as the audience. But I don't know. I feel like, you know, she notices that she's wearing Anne's ring.
Big deal.
Which, you know, they're again connected to pets, talking about all that knows all of her secrets.
Mm-hmm. And that's really the thing that gets to Megan the most.
Yeah.
It's that Don has this relationship with someone aside from her that is potentially and likely more intimate than the relationship that they have.
That's one of the
things. And not physically intimate, but emotionally.
That's one of the things that made them, that made them special, is that, you know, she, Don came clean to her.
Yeah.
In a way that he'd never done with a romantic partner before, except for Anna. Well, now, who's dead, conveniently dead. And now you got this other girl coming in that she doesn't know about, and she's turning her nose up at her steak. but I also think that there's a kernel of truth here.
Mm-hmm.
That Don is, his first reaction to the women in his life is to try to control what they do.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And in fact, that is a, that's a big streak in Megan and Don's relationship. This, the fact that there's this father figure aspect as well as the husband lover aspect, which has always been injected a weird kind of energy into their relationship.
Yeah. And it's evident in Megan's behavior here. I mean, when she says that your life is too disorganized and Don wouldn't approve.
Right.
That's a very, you know, subservient thing for her to say.
Right.
In that scenario.
And maybe she's also frightened that maybe Don, because Don does seem like he's geared up to just be, to play the cool uncle role. Like, I could see him coming out there and, like, just kind of having a laugh about it and, hey, what can I do to support you? In a way that would be offensive to Megan, who feels like she is so tightly controlled and judged by everything, you know. She's pursuing her career, again, what we talked about, in similar ways to the way Don pursued his and being labeled as crazy. Then the final blow was when she said, you know, never, nothing ever happened between us.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking, or I was talking with someone last night about how that, like, there's nothing worse if you're in a relationship with someone than when they have a non-sexual friend relationship with another attractive person. Because from outside,
you're like, how can this possibly be non-sexual?
From outside, an intimate and a non-intimate relationship in public looks exactly the same, except for in the non-intimate, they're not fucking, but you wouldn't know that, would you?
Yeah, yeah.
But they've got the inside jokes, and they got the shared history, and they're both hot. Why wouldn't they be fucking? I mean, that's something that's just going to peg your jealousometer to 10. And then you got Megan with all these insecurities and all these relationship problems in the first place, and it leads to disaster in this episode.
Sure.
This Megan and Don, I think, are this is their relationship is disintegrating as we see. And Megan, the harder she tries to get something going, the worse she makes things.
Yeah, there were several things like that in this episode where solutions turned into bigger problems.
Right. And the fact that, you know, she's violating the one rule that she set for her and Don, which is don't lie, don't be telling lies. What she's doing, what she did with Stephanie and her version that she gave to Don is a giant lie.
Sure. It's a big big rift there between what she says and what she does. We go back to Henry, who yells at Betty for ditching him at the party and talking about the war. She apologizes. This is the scene in their bedroom. And Bobby's outside the door, and he hears the whole thing.
Yep. I mean, again, the stuff that the Francises / Drapers over in Castle Frankenstein say to each other is terrible this episode. You know,
not just this episode, but
right.
I get it escalates this episode.
I mean, so Pete's girlfriend said, I'm not the type of woman who complains about getting, was it peanut butter out of the carpet? And it's basically
something like that.
Same version about crumbs in the butter. I mean, we just saw a woman, and in fact, Betty's former best friend, Frances, very much belittled Betty. And we see that this attitude, these women are changing their attitudes toward their place in the home and work and all that. And Betty still is this old fashioned character.
Yeah.
It's, I think this is, this frustration and stuff is starting to bubble up. And also, Henry did not marry Betty to be a liberated thinking woman. Mm-hmm. He married her. I don't think, you know, obviously consciously he didn't set out to be this big of a pig, but he married her because she's the ideal person to be on your arm. Sure. And it's the type of woman that he kind of wants.
Yeah, I could buy
that. Now she's bucking the mold, and the venom's coming out.
Yeah. So on his way home, Lou tells Don that he's going to wait till Monday to read his work instead of reading it tonight. And it's too late for Don to catch a plane that night. So he's got to go in the morning. Actually, you know what? He gets there early enough that I'm not sure he doesn't leave that night.
I thought so, that he did. Yeah.
Because it's like a 6-hour flight at least.
Uh-huh.
Cross country.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, no, because the party is that night. It was that morning.
Hmm?
So when
he gets in on Saturday morning.
Yeah, right.
I'm just wondering about the time frame there. But
oh, yeah, but he said, I assumed he meant 10 o'clock at night, but he actually meant 10 o'clock the next day.
Well, he said the last plane was at 9. So if he were to leave Friday night, it'd have to be by 9. I don't think he made it.
No, because it was dark.
Yeah.
And it's getting to be... I mean, we do not know. And
he said he's
going to
tuck him in. That implies that it's later than 9, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, he got out earlier than he thought from the first conversation with Megan, but later than he originally intended.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
But that's we have no idea what the date is.
We don't. The last episode, I want to say it was somewhere around April.
Yeah, it was mid to late April we identified.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming that we flash forward another month and we're in May-ish.
Probably.
So,
based on the status of Megan and Don's relationship.
And it was dark. It was definitely dark in New York, which has got to be 8:30, 9 o'clock in for this time of year. So
sure. So then Betty gets a quick call about Sally. And then the next morning, Don arrives at Megan's house and he meets Amy. And Stephanie's gone. And Megan and Amy go off to the market without Don.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to talk too much about Amy until we get to some of the juicier scenes with her. So let's continue moving over the weekend.
What about Megan's statement, a little bit of foreshadowing, when she says, Amy says, anything for you, Don? And Megan says, I know what he likes.
Likes a menage, apparently.
But the thing is that she says that, but she doesn't.
No, it's, we'll talk about that for sure when it happens. Over the weekend, the computer really begins to bother Ginsburg. He's stuffing Kleenex in his ears. And then he accidentally sees a secret meeting between Lou and Cutler.
They're getting homo.
Getting homo in the homo room, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
The computer's having some effects. Mm-hmm. And there was a YouTube video where somebody dubbed over some audio over that scene.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
All right. Funny enough to link in the show notes?
Sure, why not?
All right.
Henry brings Sally home and...
Whoa.
Yeah.
We'd be remiss to not mention that is a direct 2001 reference.
Okay. Sure.
At the scene where the astronauts are talking amongst themselves and Hal's reading their lips to see that they're plotting against him.
Yep. A couple of those in this episode, they really, you know, they really hit it last episode and this one kind of tapered off.
Interesting that they inverted that where it wasn't the computer. It was the guy afraid of the computer listening in.
Yeah. What does that mean?
But I did distinctly see Lou mouth the words Don Draper.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's someone better reading lips than us but could give us the full dialogue.
Probably. I looked on Reddit. I didn't see anything. So
yeah.
We'll see. Maybe tomorrow. Who knows? Henry brings Sally home, and she's got a broken nose, or not quite broken nose. And Betty yells at her for ruining her perfect nose. She sends her to her room until the morning. What does she mean by I'd rather do this in a barn in Farmington?
Oh, that's an abortion reference.
Oh boy.
Illegal abortion reference.
Really?
Yeah, that's what Sally said. It's a nose job, not an abortion.
Okay. Is a barn in Farmington a place where they had abortions?
Man, I don't know. Apparently there was coat hangers and alleys involved. Sure. Maybe there's pitchforks and barns. It all sounds very unsafe.
Oof.
And unsanitary.
Yeah, it does. So here, Betty is really stressing the
This escalated quickly. Angle.
Yeah, I mean, her perfect nose, you know, she's angry. I gave you that perfect nose and you're ruining it. You're wasting it.
I'm going to break your arm.
Yeah.
Go to your room. This, no.
So it's interesting. I didn't get what one of the motivations of Betty in this scene in sending Sally to her room until we see the scene with Bobby later on. But apparently Betty does not like Bobby and Sally spending much time together, especially on their own. Because I think she's afraid that Sally's attitude is going to rub off on Bobby, who she views as, you know, not old enough to hate her yet. And we get a little glimpse of that in the scene where he goes to her room, which we can talk about later.
Okay.
So Megan gets a phone call, of which she's had many, and it's some guy named Greenblatts. Is that somebody from a studio or something, probably?
I guess. I didn't look that up.
I don't think it matters.
It's a call for Megan, and it seems like it's some sort of jealousy slash admiration from her actor friend, so
okay.
I'm guessing that's what that is.
Then Ginsburg shows up at Peggy's house to complain about the computer and says that it's making men do unnatural things, according to Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to work in Peggy's living room while Julio watches TV with Peggy. That's the extent of her human interaction at this point. It's watching TV with the neighbor kid.
Yeah. Julio.
Yeah. Kind of a weird arrangement. So at the party...
Well, I mean, illustrates how alone she is.
Sure. Yeah.
That this annoying little kid that she's decided to have a nightly television watching extravaganza with him.
Yeah. So at the party, Amy flirts with Don, and then Megan tries to repeat her Zooby Zooby Doo performance, but Don is unimpressed. And then when Harry shows up unexpectedly, he and Don decide to take off for the night, go bar hopping. Or bar sitting.
Bar sitting. Single bar sitting. did you pick up on the Charles Manson-esque dress of the guy that she was zooby-zoobying with?
Uh-uh, I didn't.
Yeah, there. I saw that on Reddit that in his Manson family days that he was wearing a get-up and had his hair almost exactly like this guy's.
Wow, okay.
And it seems like that, and there's a lot of people who saw the similarities with Sharon Tate and the pregnancy of Stephanie, and people are wondering, well, is Stephanie going to be to Sharon Tate?
Okay.
I don't know. They're definitely going to touch on the Manson murders. They just have to after doing all this. I don't feel like a main cast member is going to be one of the ones dying, though. And I'll even throw Stephanie in that. I could buy Amy being murdered. I could buy someone that Megan knows, but there's just no way. There's no
way. A murder in this universe, for some reason, seems really bizarre to me. Like, it wouldn't quite fit. I
think it would fit. It just...
Maybe that's why I have kind of a little bit of problem with Ginsburg's going crazy this episode, because it just doesn't feel like a Mad Men theme to me. Like, it doesn't fit the tone of Mad Men very much.
I just think it's funny that
having a lunatic running around in the office.
Mad Men. One of the definitions of mad is crazy.
Yes.
And this is talking about the modern world and what it's doing to the male psyche and the feminine psyche and all that. But you don't see that Ginsburg is a manifestation of that? Really?
It's too blatant of a manifestation, in my opinion.
Hmm.
Having a lunatic running around the office cutting his nipples off seems insane.
Nipple.
Okay.
He hasn't still gone. He's still got the one valve.
It just doesn't feel like Mad Men to me. Mad Men feels more like what Don does at the end of this episode. Mad Men feels more like Betty and Francis, or Betty and Henry.
I don't know. I feel like one of the mission statements that the Wiener has is to touch upon all of what he views as societal ills.
Mm-hmm.
And how those have changed and how those have stayed the same. you know, contrasting how people view about pollution and environmentalism versus where we are now with that, you know, sexism in the workplace, racism, homosexuality, and the pressures that puts on people to maintain secrecy and to live these button-down lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like certainly mental illness and how we treat the mentally ill is one of those societal ills. So I feel like that's why I guess it doesn't bother me, is that I feel like this is the story of society and how it's transforming and changing and how it's not, and particularly seen through the lens of this one family, the Drapers.
Yeah.
And that's why I also don't mind, because some people are like, why are we going back to Frankenstein? Because that chapter's over, it's done with. Except for it's not. We still see the aftermath going through the kids. It also illustrates the stakes. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, why doesn't Don just go to L.A.? It seems like the obvious solution.
Yeah.
Well, he would be abandoning his kids to Castle Frankenstein, and that's terrible. Sure. And whether he does that or not tells us about Don and his soul.
Sure, and I'm not going to argue that mental illness does not play a part in society. I'm going to argue that you can't cover every single bit of society, and mental illness is one that seems out of the purview of Mad Men. I mean, it's obviously not. They're covering it.
Right.
It just doesn't and it's have not like the same tone to me.
And also, it's not like they shoehorn. I mean, I could see if this was like literally came out of nowhere and got shoehorned in, which I feel like some people are saying it is.
It escalated really quickly at the end. That's like the only problem I have.
I do feel like that's true to life. But I feel like we got some feedback on that, so maybe we should wait to consider that.
Sure. I don't know. There's some stuff I could say about Harry in this scene and Miranda and him getting rejected because of his White Castle breath, but I'll move on. Bobby sneaks into Sally's room and they talk about Betty. He gets into bed with her. There's something he says here about...
His stomach hurting all the time?
His stomach... Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the stress of Henry and his mother's strained relationship is taking a physical toll on Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Which is terrible.
Yeah, that's really sad. But also there was something else in the scene that made me think that Betty doesn't want them hanging out together very much, and something Bobby said, and I can't remember exactly what it was. So
No, I mean, I think that's... Do you believe that Sally's right when she says that this is a deliberate ploy by Betty, rather, to keep them apart?
I think so.
Huh.
I think with the comment that we heard about, you know, Bobby and Eugene not being old enough to hate her yet, I think that plays into it.
Mm. Yeah, because she's trying to somehow slow it down by keeping them away from the contaminating influence.
And yet... Which is just failing when she freaks out about sandwiches.
Yeah, forbidding your child from seeing their sibling is only going to hasten that moment.
Yes, absolutely.
The tighter you squeeze onto them, the more they're going to slip through your fingers.
There's also some question about whether or not Bobby's going to piss the bed. He said he doesn't do that anymore. Sally says they'll never let you out. You're too little. When he suggests, you know, leaving with her.
Right.
Possibly running away. Bobby says, just for that, I'm pissing the bed. Too little, huh? I'll show you.
Yeah. A little bit of Betty came out there.
Yeah.
I think it's funny how that she is such equal parts Betty and Don, because I think when she was laying there kind of leveling with her brother, she had this kind of Don world wariness about her.
Okay.
But then this taking a shot at him pissing the bed, I thought was a little bit of Betty.
So Peggy wakes up to Ginsburg staring at her. Ugh. Right in her face, very creepy. And he explains to her that the computer's plan is to turn everyone homo. He makes a move on Peggy, and then Peggy says he needs to see a doctor. She yells at him, it's just a computer. Ginsburg kind of appears to snap out of it and leave. I don't know that he snaps out of it. I think he just realized maybe more drastic measures are in store.
Right.
Because he does leave, but not a good look in his eye. So at the bar, Harry tells Don the big news that Lou and Cutler are going after the commander business, which is cigarettes, and they're going to try to get rid of him. Do you want to say anything about this scene? Or should we just talk about that all kind of at the end?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the only thing that I thought was interesting is Harry's use of the word final solution.
Okay.
Which is, of course, what Hitler referred to in their eliminating the Jews. And, yeah. You know, we also had a lot of talk about the war, but we also had...
There was some speculation that Ginsburg may have been in a concentration camp at some point.
Yeah, that was an old theory that he was a Holocaust baby. And that now he's being eliminated and he's, you know, he's screaming that this kind of, you know, say, get out while you can, save yourselves.
Yeah.
See, I don't know, man, if that's the case, I feel like that was almost that imagery is a little crass and exploitative. So I don't really want to go there. And I think I've considered the timeline. It just doesn't seem like it would work out. He was born in a concentration camp at the end of the war. He doesn't look like he's... So what would that be?
I mean, if he's born in 40, let's say, that's pretty early on. He'd be 29 at this point.
Yeah, no, I guess that would work out, right?
That could work.
So, I don't know. Would it be interesting if he was a Holocaust baby? And that's part... Started his anxiety.
It depends on what they do with
mental,
it.
Yeah, right?
In and of itself, no. That's
if
not
he just goes,
super
if he,
interesting.
If he goes off and we never see him again, except for maybe on the street...
Yeah,
it's like, why would they do that?
Yeah, I don't know. When Don gets home, Megan and Amy are waiting to have a threesome with him, and he only slightly reluctantly goes along with it.
I think he's fairly reluctantly. I mean, he is a man.
Yeah, he gives in fairly quickly.
But there's a lot of, I don't think we should really be doing this, and quizzical looks. And
there are some looks.
He's clearly uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Like, he's drunk. They're both stoned.
This is the kind of tucking in that he would have preferred. As opposed to Lou's tucking in, I think.
I just don't think he's an orgy guy.
He's really not.
He's like Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, he'd need lotions and robes.
Bathrobes, yeah. He'd have to get new orgy friends. I feel like, Don's a one-at-a-time kind of guy.
Yeah, and this is weird because I feel like Don doesn't like authority unless he's the one wielding it, I think. And in this scene, that authority is kind of taken away from him. Megan surprises him with this, something that he is pressured into going along with, I think. And it ultimately solves none of the problems that they have.
That's like I said on Facebook. It's like, oh, you've got insecurity. Yeah. You got relationship issues. Let's do a three-way. That'll solve everything.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, so I think there's that authority theme creeps into this portion of the episode as well. There's a comment about tucking you in. I don't know that there's much to that.
It's just I do think it's a bookend of the stuff with Lou.
Okay,
but beyond I don't think it goes any deeper than that. Yeah.
Okay. The next morning, Stephanie calls and Don says that he's worried about her, and Megan doesn't care to hear that. Not at all. She's jealous that Don cares for Stephanie in a way he doesn't care for her. I think.
I don't know if it's. I don't know what. What does Don think about Megan? I have no idea.
I don't think he does. It's like with Ginsburg. I don't think of you.
No.
It's not to that extent, but he doesn't call her. I don't think.
They were most aligned when she was in. She was doing marketing work with him. And they have drifted apart from the moment that she kind of rejected his career path.
Sure, I agree.
And it just keeps getting worse. So I don't think it's true that he doesn't think about her. It's just she's not as interesting as the... I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know how he really feels about her.
Okay.
And, you know, when he says he loves her, what that really means. I thought it was interesting Amy's reaction because it feels like she... has kind of picked up on the bad vibe and is a little sheepish about this whole thing.
Yeah, and you wonder when that happened. Did it happen mid-menage?
Kind of that's mid-menage no good. Meltdown?
Yeah, that's no good. Mm-mm. Not at all.
Mm-mm. Don just started sobbing.
And he cries ugly. Oof. After taking...
Also, I love it when he said, Harry told me some things he's not supposed to. And her first reaction is, what is wrong with him?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, not it's not the thing with the pigs and the goats again.
Oh, God. after taking Sally to the doctor, Henry brings her home. And they have an argument in the kitchen.
Yeah, they basically pick a fight about where they park their asses.
Yeah. And Betty says, "You're sorry, you forgot to inform me of what I'm supposed to think. Guess what? I think all by myself."
She speaks Italian, Jim.
She does. One trip to Italy and you suddenly speak Italian, huh, Betty?
I think she does speak Italian, though. I don't think that's a joke.
No, I think she does. You're right. This is weird. She's once again kind of, she's bucking that authority.
Uh-huh.
Like, after having apologized for it and kind of giving in to Henry, she's turning around and saying, "I might run for office."
Mm.
It's very strange. That Betty's kind of all over the map for me.
Yeah, I wonder if that is an idle jest, or if that's going to be something, some kind of arc where she does try to run for some minor office.
We only have nine episodes left.
Yeah, I mean,
with two this season.
Think of what all's happened in the five we've had so far. I mean, they could squeeze that in, no problem.
All right. Ginsburg delivers a nip in a box to Peggy here, and she freaks out and calls the authorities. Wow, I couldn't believe this. I had roughly the same reaction that Peggy did. I jumped back in my seat when I saw what it was, and I freaked out a little.
And Elizabeth Moss playing this reaction, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
That is a very tough thing to do, to lose your ship and then keep it together just long enough to get the situation under control and being terrified and shocked and just agog at this whole thing. Getting gifted with the slice nipple, and how calm Ginsburg was about it.
Yeah, yeah, he's psychotically calm.
Yeah, and this could have broken a lot worse, because last year when he's talking about, they were like beaming the dangerous thoughts or the unsafe thoughts. I forget the exact terminology he used, but it's chilling in light of what happened here. I mean, it's a damn good thing that Peggy, I mean, imagine, you know, what if Ginsburg is staring at her for an hour and decided to get a knife and make some connection between them by opening up their veins or something? I mean, this could have gone bad.
Cutting off her nipple.
Yeah, this could have gone bad pretty quickly. And, I mean, this is a fairly benign, I mean, for everybody but Ginsburg, way to end things. And it's just, you know, it's really sad. It's terrible.
Sure. I agree with that. Finally, we get to the scene that I think everybody loved so much. I know I did. Don shows up at Lou and Cutler's meeting with Commander, and then he pitches them an STRATEGY for doing business with SC&P while he retains his job. Genius move by Don. Yet another move that I didn't see coming, and yet in hindsight it makes complete sense. He's changing the conversation, as he always does.
And also addressing the elephant in the room and shooting it like the CEO of GoDaddy. I think that the fact that he disarmed that and then also said, "Yeah, I'm ready to leave. I can leave any time, but here's why you don't want me to leave."
Yeah.
And then he draws to sketch some modicum of respect to Lou, he says, "Like Lou, I have 10 years, you know." But so he's assuming that Lou is already going to pitch his tobacco experience, and anticipating that, he's then spinning on why he's better.
Yeah.
And while, like, you know, yeah, he's worked around it. I have saved your guys' asses in five separate occasions in the last decade.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen the other side. I know the strategy, and I know how to beat it.
That's the thing. That's the clincher for me. Not only those two things, but he also is willing to write an apology letter for the letter that he wrote to the New York Times trashing tobacco.
I'm not sure if that's the exact offer, but definitely he signaled that he would fall on his sword and humiliate him in whatever way that would be satisfying to themselves.
Yeah, and not just to themselves, but the tobacco industry as a whole, right?
Right.
Like, they're going to kind of be the heroes of tobacco by getting the evil Don Draper to bow down to their wishes.
Plus, I think there's something, and I'm not sure exactly what, because he said they are still your competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Implying that maybe that was also slightly menacing.
It is. I mean, if Don, they've been kind of foreshadowing this, I think, in multiple arenas. we know Joan did this with the shoe company. She said, hey, look, if you fire us, we're going to be your competition. Mm-hmm. Roger essentially said the same thing about Don in the partners meeting where they were talking about firing him. Now Don is doing the same thing to Commander. Hmm. If you fire me, I'm going to be your competition.
No, that's not. He's talking about the other tobacco company that he's mentioning about their friends. He said that those are still your competition as well. I don't think he's threatening to go to the other side, or maybe that was.
I think that's what he's doing there.
Huh.
Saying, if you push me out of this agency, I'll join up with another agency. We'll land the other tobacco companies and work against you.
Well, that would be certainly a very veiled threat. Hmm. No, but it definitely, and also he said something that we know is true, that Don didn't have any ideological problem with tobacco. It was a spiteful thing he did to try to, and also to try to save his company.
Yeah.
So seen through that light, but then again, I don't know. I'm not sure where this is going to go, because as the, Commander Tobacco guy said, we're not ready to turn on our friends as easy as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, so Don's basically stabbed someone in the back, and he's now offering to stab the other person in the back for this new person. And there's something that's unappealing about how mercenary that is. And that's, I think that's going to be, I don't know, man. Cutler might be right about this not saving him. And it would also be, this would be the second time the Wiener has set us up for an epic Don moment, and then show him completely set back on his heels the next episode.
Sure.
So definitely brilliant, and it's what we expect out of Don Draper. But this feels like the season of scripts being flipped.
I think scripts are about to be flipped, because there are a couple of interesting things that are about to happen.
Okay.
In history here. April 1st, 1970, the Public Health Cigarette Smoking Act is passed by Nixon.
Sure.
And basically it required a stronger health warning on cigarette packages that says, warning, the Surgeon General has determined that cigarette smoking is dangerous to your health. The act also banned cigarette advertisements on American radio and television.
Sure.
That's huge. If this thing can get delayed until April next year, they may not have a reason to fire Don at all.
Well, I think, I don't know. It depends on, because there's two ways to look at that. Number one, oh, we can't do radio and television shit, we're screwed. Mm-hmm. The other way to look at it is, what are we not doing now that we can do, and how can we make the advertising we're still allowed to do more effective?
So,
magazines, newspapers, racetracks, sports sponsors, you know, race sponsorships, all the clothing, the youth advertising, all the stuff that we've seen. And it's funny because the government continually tries to just stick its fingers in this dike that is tobacco.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, seal up these loopholes, but they're very good at pivoting out of that. And you can see a guy like Don saying, I know what's coming, and, you know, you can get at the inside track, and we'll be ready to counter each one of their thrusts where your competition is going to be scrambling.
And I assume that Don is probably talking about that act. If he has sat down with the government and said,
yeah. Or with the American Heart Association, or whoever he was with.
Who was probably working to draft legislation to get the advertising removed, et cetera. The other thing that's about to happen, as you said, talking about pivoting into other markets and stuff, American Tobacco Company is about to rename itself to American Brands Incorporated and start buying up other types of goods, not just producing tobacco and making cigarettes. So they are about to pivot into something bigger. Pretty interesting historical stuff there. The police come in to SC&P, and they cart off Ginsburg, and Peggy eyes the computer kind of suspiciously or angrily, a little of both.
My notes say a chilling look at the computer.
Yeah, what did you make of that look?
I don't know.
To me, it felt like angry. Like, look what you did to this guy.
Sure.
But at the same time, she can't really blame the computer. After all, it's just a computer, Ginsburg.
Yeah, but there is something that none of the creative types liked about bringing that thing in at the expense of creative.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's undeniably, you know, we've talked about Ginsburg being just a nudge away from madness. That, unmistakably, the nudge.
Definitely, yeah.
So I can see why she would have a lot of anger about, you know, that and how that went down and kind of was rammed down everyone's throats.
Okay. Final scene. Don sees Lou and Cutler off after the meeting. The war is on. War is definitely on, the much like the Vietnam War.
It's now a shooting war. It's a hot war.
Yep. There are several parallels with this war and Nixon and Vietnam. I don't know what they all are. I wasn't alive at the time. It's hard for me to say, and I don't know much about the period.
But that won't keep us from podcasting about it, folks. Don't you worry.
There are maybe a couple of other things I want to talk about the meeting. A lot of people are saying that Don just completely blatantly violated those stipulations.
He did.
I only see him violating one.
Which is
not sticking completely to the script. He does stick to the script in the fact that he volunteers to leave the company, which they were going to say, and they even thank him for saying it so they don't have to.
But that wasn't an approved script.
It was approved by at least the people who knew about it.
But Don wasn't one of those people, so how could he possibly know that's a talking point?
But it was a talking point. It doesn't matter if he knew or not.
Look, approved script means Don sends a script, all the partners sign off on it, and then he gets it back and he sticks to that. This is him stealing a script. And
that is approved by the partners, presumably.
And then crashing it without permission. Like, I don't see how you can say that is anything less than a blatant...
The script in this meeting was, let's get them on board and get Don out the door. That's exactly what Don told them. He did then, I think, violate it by suggesting an alternative. That he broke from the script there, certainly. I'm not going to argue that.
There was no script at that point.
I disagree.
Okay, so you think...
Had Lou and Cutler talked about what they were going to say in this meeting?
Of course.
That is a script approved by partners who knew about it.
I cannot believe you're making this argument. It's literally blowing my mind.
It's blowing my mind that you don't understand it.
I know. I perfectly understand it. I still can't believe that, like, you would sit there if you were Don and say, I was following the script that I had no knowledge about.
But he did have knowledge of it, A.
So he's going to burn Harry.
Who knows?
And the other thing is, so I stole this script that I don't know that all the partners, I'm one of the partners, it didn't get approved, I then went off of that script because none of the other shit he said as pitching of his personal was certainly approved. So that is a clear violation of the rule.
Yeah.
I think you're arguing letter versus spirit. I think there's a violation of the spirit and then the letter of the law. And there's also, it seemed like there was something about him, the fact that he was at that client meeting without permission would have been a problem as well.
I don't think so. He's just not allowed to meet with clients alone, which he didn't do.
And also, he did this did not come through Lou Avery's office, so he also is insubordinate.
I disagree. He's in that meeting.
Please explain how this is something that Lou Avery would want him to do. And if he didn't do it, then that's insubordinate.
He volunteered to go along with what Lou was going to tell a guy.
Dude, I mean,
I don't know. You're right. I'm very much arguing letter of the law. I think it applies in this situation.
Like I said, I think that this might be foreshadowing when Cutler says, "You think this is saved? You think this is going to save you?"
I could see that.
The only way that Don is working there is because Roger is so passionate about the argument. If he blatantly, and he did blatantly violate at least one of the rules.
Yeah.
And there was a zero tolerance. I don't see him talking his way out of it if Cutler makes an issue out of it.
Sure.
The only thing that would save him is if I think American Tobacco comes back and says, we're going to go forward, but only if you guarantee that Don Draper is is on the campaign.
And I think that's his real gambit here. Can he convince them that they need him?
He's basically relying on the client wanting it so bad that it makes him relevant again, which is a huge gamble, and I don't know that it'll pay off. The way I was reading that room is they were intrigued, but again, the whole mercenary nature of that relationship and the naked offer to betrayal, it's like I say in Game of Thrones with the Mongols. the Genghis Khan going up to city after city saying, hey, open up the gates and I'll spare you, and then fucking killing everybody. Eventually that word gets around, then you're going to meet a city that's like, fuck you, I don't care. Come get it.
Sure.
That's hard for me to, I mean, God knows tobacco executives are greedy and short-sighted. So maybe Don knows that too. So maybe that's what he's counting on. But it seems like a bad play.
Either way, I'm super curious to see how the war plays out.
For sure.
Because it sparked in a pretty phenomenal way. That's it for the episode.
All right. We have a thing that we do usually in between episode and feedback, which is our pimping. My God, this is going poorly so far. We are proud to be sponsored by Hover at Hover.com. You know, there's a lot of places you can go and register domain names at nowadays. There's companies that advertise on the Super Bowl and don't give a shit about privacy. And then there's places like Hover. Hover doesn't believe in heavy-handed upselling or charging you for something that should just be there. A lot of places, you get halfway through the shopping cart experience thinking you're getting a low price, and oh, you need privacy for your domain. Mm-hmm. That's $2.99. You want it to be secure. That's an extra $4. They nickel and dime you.
Yep.
Hover knows you need that stuff, and they put it in there at their low price. Also, they pride themselves on service and support. Do you have a problem? You pick up the phone, you talk to a real live person. No automated ticketing system, no confusing dialing on your touchpad numbers to get our person to help you out. And you know, Jim and I wouldn't send you to some place that we haven't tried ourselves. We've transferred a few of our domains over to Hover. We really like their system. We tried their valet service where we use that real live person to hold our hands and walk us through the procedure. Couldn't be easier. We couldn't be more thrilled at the service. Bottom line is, the people that know their stuff recommend Hover. Jim and I are such people, and we are recommending Hover to you. Go to Hover.com and use our exclusive Bald Move promo code Pepperoni. Oh my, what could that be in reference to? Do I have to put it in the gift box and wrap it up? Pepperoni, make sure you spell it right with two P's, and get 10% off your first order. Thanks for them for sponsoring us, and we'll get on with the feedback. Thomas says, am I the only one wondering why Sylvia and or Arnold haven't appeared this season? In years past, Don's former flames have disappeared once his affairs were done. But it strains believability to think that Don would never encounter Sylvia and Arnold, last seen in episode 511 Favors, since they both still live directly beneath Don's apartment. Arnold was a close friend of Don, and to our knowledge, he still doesn't know about the affair. I think that the Wiener is missing a huge dramatic opportunity by not showing the full consequences of Don cheating so close to home in season 5. What do you think?
So, we skipped a fair amount of time between seasons. I mean, we assume that Arnold and Sylvia are still downstairs. We don't really know that. We don't know what happened in the meantime. I am a little surprised that they didn't even give us some hints as to what happened there. Not like Sally has talked about it with Don very briefly, but that's it. And it was never explained how that ended. I would be surprised if we don't get some explanation.
And we do, because some people's like, well, what evidence do we have that we're still living there? Well, number one, we didn't have that big of a jump in the season.
Yeah, number two, not a huge one.
Sally's under the impression that she could bump into her by going to that building.
Oh, did she say something about that?
Yeah, when she's at the dinner, it's like, you know how stressful it is for me to go there?
Yeah.
I can find that woman and see her again and smell her perfume. And Don didn't be like, no, she left. That's gone. It can never happen again,
okay.
Pumpkin.
Yeah, so they are downstairs.
Yeah. I don't know, because that broke bad for everyone so far around. And I think, if anything, Sylvia would be cut him off because she was horrified by the Sally thing. Don was horrified by the Sally thing. Would it surprise me if we see them again? No. Would I feel like it's we didn't have full consequences? No, I feel like Don experienced the worst consequence, which is a loss of love from his little girl. That's the worst thing that can happen to Don Draper.
Absolutely. And Mad Men, when they end these kind of things, they sometimes don't end them, directly. They'll end them indirectly. A character will utter a line later on that implies that something happened.
Sure.
And maybe we'll get some of that.
Sure.
I don't think we'll see him again. Who knows?
John in California says, I know all of Don's secrets. I got what I came for. Will Stephanie's blackmail be the thing that brings down Don in the end? Remember, Dick Whitman was seen committing a felony, or has been committing a felony, every year he signed his tax return as Don Draper. Stephanie or hippie milieu may be Don's Manson family, quote unquote. Do you think that Stephanie will attempt to blackmail Don?
Well, he says, John says that she's already blackmailing Don. And I did not view it that way.
Wait,
though.
Who
I see
said this?
The emailer.
Okay. Oh.
He said that it was blackmail. And I didn't see it that way during the episode, but I also see how it, you could definitely read it that way.
No, oh, I strongly disagree. And I don't even think I can.
I mean, it's blackmail with a smile if it's blackmail, but I don't know.
I think it's more, I'm your niece and I'm in trouble and you're the first person I thought to call. There was no like,
sure,
or else.
But what happens next time she's in trouble?
I think Don helps her.
Okay, what if Don eventually stops wanting to help her?
I don't, again.
Can he? Is that an arrangement that he could,
yes,
make?
Yes. And the fact that Stephanie took her brush off from Megan like a champ tells me, mm-hmm, that she's a little bit hip. She cares for Don.
But only after getting a $1,000 check.
She didn't ask for that, man.
She asked for money.
Certainly.
Directly.
Certainly. But it wasn't, if she only cared about the money, she wouldn't have called. And also, I thought she tried to put a positive spin on Megan. I mean, she could have said nothing at all or implied that Megan gave her the brush off, but she said, mm-hmm, Megan's a solid lady.
Sure. I'm playing devil's advocate here because I didn't pick that up. But I think it could be construed as blackmail.
The other thing is, I already said that I think Stephanie is a plain dealer, and that would be kind of a violation of her character. And she just, I don't know.
She tells Megan, I know all of his secrets, right before Megan writes up a big check.
Well, but that's also in the context of, you know, her and them chatting about, sure, his past. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I did not get that at all.
Okay.
Anything else?
No.
Rob A. says, I wanted to bring up the last scene in Jim Cutler's line, you think this is going to save you, don't you? When Cutler was referring to, or while Cutler was referring to Don's job, I think the wiener was speaking to Don's character. Don Draper thinks this job is just what he needs to save himself and to put things back in place. Oh, I like where this is going already. Why else hasn't he just moved out to L.A. to party in the new Pete Pitt 2.0?
Well, his kids, for one, like you said.
This job, this agency, is who Don Draper is. Without it, he's just a regular everyman, just another Dick Whitman with classic good looks and a giant penis. For him, a pretty terrifying thought. I know, I'm scared just thinking about it. With the talk...
is going on? I feel like Ginsburg. Is this email making me homo? What's happening here?
No, I'm interjecting.
I thought so. Okay.
All right. I thought that's clear to people. I don't know why I think that
I'm not sure that that was clear that time.
I don't know why I assume that people can understand without me shifting my voice or altering my pitch that I'm just inserting stuff into people's email that amuses me.
Okay.
But if a emailer is gratuitously swearing or talking, mm-hmm, about dicks out of nowhere, it's usually me.
Okay.
Anyway, without it, he's just a regular everyman. With the talk in the first half of the season being more about the material world and the second immaterial, we might be able to see where things are headed. Don's road to redemption isn't just about getting his office back. It's much more than that. A reconciliation with his past that has been the focal point of the past season and a half. Without this job, without the agency, we will see if Don can truly find a way to save himself from his demons. I like that. I like that take about that dual meaning of you think this is going to save you, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Don has to escape SCNP? Do you think that this is his purgatory?
Purgatory?
His peggy-tory. Do you think it's his purgatory?
Huh. I mean, we've always kind of talked about how everyone at SC, DP, SCNP, all of them, have been kind of scumbags. And being in that environment, I'm certain, doesn't help Don at all. So, I mean, getting out of there would probably help him. I just don't know what he would become at that point.
A good father, healthy individual.
But he's right. A lot of Don is tied up in his work and this company.
I get it, but that's, I think he's arguing
without that
I like.
Part. Yeah, without that part of Don, what does he become?
Dick Whitman.
Okay.
Only
I could see that.
Only he needed to take this journey to be at peace with Dick Whitman.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, it's starting to feel like this is going to be a rosier end for Don. Like it's going, sure, to be post advertising world. It's going to be, maybe we're still spending this time with Castle Frankenstein to establish that maybe Betty will be out of the picture. And Don can just move his kids out to L.A. Maybe maybe Sally's old enough that she chooses to live with him, with the promise that maybe Bobby and Jean, when they complete their own penance and go through their hell, that they can go over to the West Coast with Don. A happy ending for Don cannot mean him abandoning his children.
Sure.
It can, but Megan's up for grabs. In fact, I don't see the credits rolling on this series with him and Megan together. It doesn't seem like it.
It doesn't seem like it. I also couldn't possibly see him and Betty ever becoming anything each other again.
No.
If just for the kids. So those are kind of some stipulations on what it can't include.
Right. But it does feel like, and maybe this is just a wiener gut punch coming. I think we'll know. I think we'll have a very good feeling by this mid-season finale.
Okay.
Whether we're going for a redemption and an uplifting arc, or whether we're going for a punishment, karmic payback, you can't escape who you are kind of arc. Corey L. says, whoa, on your podcast last week, I believe you talked briefly about how unpredictable the show can be, referring to the randomness of events like the lawnmower tragedy, tragedy of the British foot. I don't think anyone could have predicted that a period drama about advertising would contain an episode where a man cuts off his own nipple to release computer-generated homoerotic thoughts from his body.
Right.
His penis doesn't work?
Well, that wasn't the what did he call it?
The data waves? His valve?
No, the valve, the...
It's literally a valve. It has valves built into it, man. Maybe Matt Weiner is trying to say something about how unaware people are of mental illness. There's probably many suffering people who never get the help they need because they and their peers are simply ignorant of the fact that they are sick. I do believe that is true.
Yeah, sure.
Lewis R. said, Stephanie was very pregnant, as was Sharon Tate, who was 8.5 months pregnant when she was murdered. That's where I got that information in the main recap, so thank you for that. Also, one other interesting comment, when Don told Megan to tell Amy to leave as he wanted to keep the Stephanie situation inside the family, then a day later the ménage à trois happens, which brings Amy into the family. Are we missing something? Like, maybe Amy's going to find out about Don's secrets, and that's going to be a problem for him? It just seems like Don's post-worrying about Dick Whitman.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the IRS throws him in jail. Maybe. I don't know.
Doesn't seem like a very satisfying ending, in my opinion.
No.
Because Dick Whitman doesn't deserve that. Don Draper does.
It's good enough for Al Capone. It's probably good enough for Don Draper, though.
Probably.
Moving on.
Yep.
Jamie T said, this was the worst episode of Mad Men I've seen in a long, long time. And Jamie's watched a lot of television with us.
Wow. Yeah, she has.
It reminds me of season two, perhaps because of superfluous Betty whining and the whole jealous spouse thing we've seen so much before, this time with Megan. Megan's more entertaining about being jealous. Three-way? What? But it ain't the office drama that's been kicking ass this season. The worst offense of all was the dialogue. Mad Men's always had dialogue that errs on the side of style over reality, and like Quentin Tarantino or Joss Whedon, you can forgive something for being too smart. With television shows, it's hard to pin anything on one writer, but I'm going to go ahead and blame this David Iserson fellow, who has never shown up on a Mad Men writing credit before. Guys, I never even glanced at the writing credits, and I could hear something was off. The fight between Betty and Sally particularly stung. We're used to seeing people somehow think coherently during Mad Men arguments, but my God, every single line was one of those perfect comebacks you'd wish you'd said 2 days after the fact. I'm hoping this one's an anomaly. One thing I don't understand here is Jamie arguing that this argument was beneath Mad Men, or it was too perfect?
I think both. I think too perfect is beneath Mad Men. Mad Men has a way of being realistic. That's dialogue sometimes.
I thought this evolved the kindergarten playground pretty quickly.
I thought so too. I'm honestly not on the same page as Jamie on this one.
I'm not either.
But, you know, to each their own.
But I get it. That drives me crazy too. If I'm watching a show and I feel like it downshifts in an episode or two, it really sticks out. I just, you know, you're not alone. A lot of mixed feedback amongst professional critics and amongst fellow watchers. So hopefully next week we'll hit you better. There's only two episodes left. God, I hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with some of the tone stuff, but the dialogue was fine for me.
I'd hate for people to be bummed out with Mad Men. you know, Breaking Bad did so well last season, ending things, mm-hmm. Giving something for everybody. It just sucked that if the wiener couldn't stick the landing. Dan G said, we're not quite sure of anyone's role within the story, whether at home or at the office. We're thrown back into Don and Megan's relationship without any context. Last time we saw them interact, they were on the brink. When Don calls Megan early in the episode, they seem to be back normal. What are they to each other at this point? And what's Megan's relationship to Amy? At SC&P, things are no clearer. What role do the copywriters play now that the computer has taken residence in the creative lounge? And how much of Lou's bullshit does Don have to take since, after all, he founded the company? Our confusion is shared by the characters. With Don's niece, Stephanie, phones the office, she mentions that she wasn't sure to call herself to her secretary. Wait, whoa, she wasn't sure what to call herself to his secretary. No one really knows what to call themselves in 1969. Mad Men has always been a show about upheaval, and The Runaways narrows the focus to overturning the traditional family. We see several variations on family, none of which is the traditional mode of father, mother, child. Surrogate fathers and stepfathers, Don to Stephanie and Henry to Sally. Surrogate wives, Harry's date, who will now have to find a ride. Single parents, Stephanie, Ginsburg's dad, plus the young tenant in Peggy's building lives alone with his mom. Same-sex couples, Megan's ambiguous relationship to Amy, Cutler, and Lou, although this one exists only in Ginsburg's mind. Polyamorous relationships, the Don, Megan, Amy triangle.
Or exists only in the computer room.
Who knows? Well, that's where the waves are the strongest, Jim.
True.
It says, Mad Men began in an era where societal roles were defined by the family. The father earned a paycheck, the mother took care of the home, the children were seen and not heard unless they were around to take the occasional drink order. Without the structure, these roles become less evident and people are forced to reorient themselves to changing times. It says, none of this makes anything clearer, obviously, which can make a man just want to cut off his own nipple. Society's become so jumbled in Ginsburg's head that his defining moment makes as much sense symbolically as it does physiologically. The nipple is representative of the mother, not the father. Is Don's gambit at the secret William Morris meeting just as crazy as it is destructive? I guess time will tell. What do you think about the parallel between Ginsburg nipple cutting and Don's boardroom ninja style?
A lot to process in that email.
There was a lot more to it. I had to edit for content and time.
Can you explain to me again the parallel between Ginsburg and Don in the boardroom?
I think that basically was, so Ginsburg did something in his own head that made sense to him.
Yeah.
Both on a symbolic and a thematic and a real level. Don, in his own head, and we're kind of in his head from his POV, did the same thing with this ninja meeting. But was the parallel, since these scenes kind of booked Eve and interleaved with each other, is there a parallel there that we're supposed to see what Don's doing, like from Cutler's perspective, that this is crazy. The tobacco executives are not titillated. They're horrified that this assassin is back to offer to kill his previous, boss again.
Maybe that's not the vibe I got at the end of the episode though, with Don whistling for his cab. That felt to me like a triumphant whistle, like I just got back in the game kind of whistle. I don't know. If that's what they're trying to say, then it was lost on me. I'll say that.
Okay, grimy little Mitch from New Jersey wonders, where's Bob Benson? Only two episodes left, and we still haven't gotten any. Praying he finds his way into some of the show's final 9 episodes. You predicted we'd never see him again.
I did.
And that's feeling like a very strong prediction. Detroit.
He's been mentioned multiple times.
In fact, if the mid-season climaxes with Don leaving the company, which is starting to feel like it's the case, I don't think we'll ever see Bob Benson again. And you'll be right, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, we still have some stuff to conclude with Peggy, certainly. Yeah, I mean, we're going to see more of that office, I think, even if Don leaves.
All right.
Because he's not the only character that we care about in that office anymore.
Right.
So maybe there's still a shot, but it's looking more and more like we won't see him.
I think, let's throw one more. Nick G said, at first, Megan's discomfort around Stephanie seems like it's from the obvious suspicion that Stephanie has a past with Don and the baby might even be his. I didn't get that. but I'm going to roll with it. The discomfort comes from something deeper than that. Stephanie's the things that Megan is pretending to be, and at the same time, her total opposite. Megan is a pretend hippie, while Stephanie is clearly the real filthy deal. Stephanie is pregnant and unmarried, while Megan is married and unpregnant. While Stephanie seems genuinely free and independent and moving into motherhood, it seems like Megan is moving backwards into teenagerhood with her corny party and living off her dad like husband while she chases a fruitless and corny dream. I guess Megan lures Don into the threesome to maintain control over him since he doesn't want to take the bait to assert himself when she dances with the hippie so that she has to turn up the juice. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. That dancing, the zooby-zooing with the hippie was a clear provocation to Don, and he wasn't taking up the bait, which made Megan upper game to threesome territory.
Yeah. All right.
It's also... Then Don is back to using things that happened in his personal life to fuel his creative and professional fire again, because he then immediately goes into his second threesome with two other people he doesn't like, where he assumes a submissive role in order to keep his job. The cigarette brand being called Commander is laying it on pretty thick since Don is being dominant by feigning submissiveness. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting. And also, I don't think we mentioned this yet. We've talked about it, but we haven't mentioned it. Ginsburg cutting off his nipple and presenting it to Peggy is a lot like when Van Gogh gave his ear to the prostitute. Like Van Gogh, Ginsburg is a real artist.
Okay.
That's a nice parallel, too.
Yeah, for sure. Nick. If you guys want to read more about like the themes of authority and power in this episode, Wired actually did a really good write-up on that this time. So go search for their 705 review.
Okay. That's all the feedback we got.
Okay. Cool.
If you'd like to give us more for next week, you can send it in to madmen@baldmove.com. Of course, we have the, I used to call them live, but because I'm recording Game of Thrones Instant Take, I can't anymore. The water cooler discussion on facebook.com/baldmove of each week's episode. I usually get in there about an hour late. There's like the burst of the initial burst where people are talking real time and then I come in and crash a party. Jim, you can always tweet your thoughts over to him @baldmove on Twitter. And I think that's it until next week.
All right. Sounds good. Until then, I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron. See you then.